From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 22nd day of March 2018. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. We'll hear from the President of the United States today. He announced that upcoming, he will put some retaliatory trade practices in place against China for what he sees as intellectual property rights theft. And a bit later, we'll hear about the weather forecast too. That with Mike Tenora from T-Storm out of Chicago, Illinois. It all happens right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
We're now joined by Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas, to take a look at the marketplace and what happened in Chicago today. And Dan, I don't know whether I want to start in Chicago or in Washington, D.C. A couple of big stories, we'll hear about these in the news, but the Section 199A or grain glitch was fixed by Congress last night. The House has passed that legislation. The Senate has to take a look at it, at least through, I think, midnight tomorrow. And if it gets passed and signed into law, then the grain glitch will go away. And then the other big item came out of the president's office today, out of the White House. They were talking about intellectual property rights, and some, I think the official number was 50. The president talked about $60 billion worth of tariffs that might be put up against Chinese products, though there is about a 60-day period. I call that a cooling off period before things will go into place. So lots of things happening. What did you find of most interest?
Well, I think the one that the trade's the most worried about is trade and what Trump is trying to accomplish by trying to narrow the trade deficits that we have with China and with the other countries around the world. I think nationally we have what a 600 or 800 billion bushel or billion dollar deficit throughout the world. China accounts for something between, I guess, 300 and 500 billion, depending upon how you calculate it, I guess. So China's the biggest banana in the bunch. You know, a couple weeks ago, we were talking about the NAFTA, Mexico, and Canada. Trump is just you know, he's making moves here to try to narrow those deficits. I think his goal is to get China to that deficit narrowed at least $100 billion dollars. He's not asking for it all at once. And I think that's the same thing as probably what he's going to ask for out of the NAFTA agreement and whatnot. And that, you know, anytime that makes everybody nervous, but you know, there isn't such a thing as free trade. And when people talk about free trade, they're not talking about free trade. Everything in this country is managed trade, and it depends on who's sitting at the table. And then, you know, the other countries have tariffs on stuff of our products going into their countries and whatnot. And Trump is trying to level the playing field. And I think, and it's not new for them. I mean, they've heard he ran on that issue. So I don't think anything shocking to these countries knowing that Trump is going to move in that direction, that he's wanting to bring him to the table and begin to try to narrow some of these trade deficits. But anytime they talk about that, that makes the agricultural people awful nervous because we rely on exports. China's the biggest buyer of soybeans for several years, and that makes us nervous that China may retaliate somehow and may not buy soybeans from us or slow down their purchases or whatnot. So that's probably the biggest issue. I think the tax deal, I think, kind of came to a head here a couple weeks ago. They kind of came to an agreement, and it was just a matter of a formality to go ahead and let it go through on this piece of legislation that's working its way through Congress now. And that levels the playing field. It doesn't give the co-ops the advantage they had over the privates the way it was written. I think the co-ops still end up a hair better but it's more of a fair playing field. And I think the privates are, at least they're accepting of this compromise that is moving through the legislation.
Were you surprised that the trade took the announcement over the noon hour from the president so well? Because it didn't really seem to react, at least in the grains and the oil seeds.
Well, no, because I think it's already kind of somewhat priced into the market. It's not really new. We knew Trump was going to, at some point in time, ask for China to narrow that trade deficit. And I've always said all along, that's one of the reasons I think, you know, he nominated the former governor of Iowa, Terry Branstad, which is a personal friend of the president of China. Trump can maybe be the bad guy and Terry can kind of be the good guy, and maybe they can come up with some kind of compromise. And I've said all along, China just needs to buy some more agricultural products from us and help narrow that trade deficit. Instead of buying them from South America, they need to buy more from us. So we'll see how things work out. But I'm not concerned about any kind of major trade war for the simple reason, as long as we are the ones on the short end of the stick, the other countries have more to lose than we have. Now, I know nobody wants to get in no trade war, and nobody really wins when you get into a trade war. But they have more to lose than we have in the big picture. And I think they're all talking behind closed doors, and I think they all realize that somehow they're going to have to work toward narrowing that trade deficit over a period of time. So I don't really look for anything major that'll hit the market on a bearishness. I think it'll all be done fairly orderly. And I think Trump's going to do what he said he was going to do, is negotiate better deals for the United States. And, like I said, in the long run, maybe U.S. agriculture is going to end up being the biggest beneficiary, because we have a lot of food to sell to China.
Okay, so given that, when we ended the day today, we have $3.98 or $4 December corn, and $10.26 or $10.30, not quite, November soybeans. Where do we go from here on those two?
Well, I think when you look at the odds statistically, very rarely do we post seasonal highs in November and December, or November soybean futures, December corn futures, during the first 3 months of the year. Only around 30% or so of the highs over a 40-year period are posted during January, February, March. And when they are posted during that time frame, they're usually posted after we came off of a short crop and the prices have rallied sharp enough during the fall months to ration demand. So then we enter the new calendar year with declining demand. And that is not the case this year. We've came off of two record crops back to back, and actually demand is growing. It is not shrinking. So I think both contracts, the odds at this point are still to move higher as we go on into the growing season. But like anything, anytime you look at a statistic, nothing is perfect and exact, and there's no guarantees to it. But I'm one to feel that we are more in a seasonal type pattern, which would argue the case that we would have a fairly high probability that we crank this thing higher as we go into May, June, July, and August, when we normally make seasonal highs in December corn futures and November soybean futures. So that's what I think. Now, technically, as far as I'm concerned, everything is relatively normal. When you look at corn, December corn futures has retraced 50% of its advance out of its December low. And this is a place for December corn to find good technical support 50% retracement levels, whether they're on the way down or on the way up, as a rule, are very hard spots for the market. And you also take a look at the 50-day moving average is right underneath today's low. So I think December corn low here today is a target, or at least a candidate, for a short-term low that could turn into something more major. But we do need to see some upside follow through tomorrow. And then I'd like to see some upside follow through as we go on into next week. And then, of course, then we'll keep our fingers crossed that we don't get any major shockers out of that March 29th or 28th report that we have. But I think everything, what we've seen here over the last 2 to 3 weeks is a normal type correction. It's a 50% retracement back. Now it's time for the market to kind of hold here and build and go for another leg up that takes us into the planting season. Now, when you look at November soybeans, I think the last time I talked to you, there was a second try at a weekly reversal to the upside. And again, that second try failed this week. So we've had two tries to try to put a bottom in this soybean market, and both times has failed. So I'm a little concerned, but I guess I'm willing to go for maybe three's a charm here. When you look at the retracement level on November soybeans, again, we're at a 38% retracement. That is very typical of a soybean market to retrace 38%. Now, if the 38% retracement doesn't hold, then many times we'll do a 62% retracement. But I think, again, we have 50-day moving average underneath the November soybeans. So I still think from a technical and cyclical and statistical point of view that we still have better times ahead of us in both November soybeans and December corn.
Thanks so much. I appreciate you taking the time with me today.
Okay, root for those Aggies tonight.
Only if I have to. Hey, thanks so much, Dan. Dan Zwicker, he's with Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Here's today's agricultural news. President Donald Trump today announced up to $60 billion in trade barriers will be used punitively against Chinese interest in retaliation for what the administration sees as intellectual property rights theft. His comments on the subject were wide-ranging today and indicate the president remains concerned about trade imbalances of all types.
We have a tremendous intellectual property theft situation going on, which likewise is hundreds of billions of dollars. And that's on a yearly basis. I've spoken to the president. I've spoken to representatives of China. We've been dealing with it very seriously. As you know, we're renegotiating NAFTA. We'll see how that turns out. Many countries are calling to negotiate better trade deals because they don't want to have to pay the steel and aluminum tariffs. So we are negotiating with various countries, Mr. Lighthizer, Mr. Ross. We are just starting a negotiation with the European Union because they've really shut out our country to a large extent. They have barriers that they can trade with us, but we can't trade with them. They're very strong barriers. They have very high tariffs. We don't. It's just not fair. NAFTA has been a very bad deal for the United States, but we'll make it better, or we'll have to do something else.
Mr. Ross is Wilbur Ross, the Secretary of Commerce. Mr. Lighthizer is Robert Lighthizer, the U.S. Trade Representative. His office will impose the reciprocal trade tariffs, and he says the announcement comes as the result of a study the president asked be produced.
The result of this has been that the president has analyzed it. We have a 200-page study, which we'll put out, and he has concluded that we should put in place tariffs on appropriate products we can explain later how we concluded what products they are, that that we would put investment restrictions on China with respect to high technology, and that we'll file a WTO case because one of the actions here does involve a WTO violation. This is an extremely important action, very significant and very important for the future of the country, really across industries, and I would really like to thank you very much, Mr. President, for giving me the opportunity to work on it.
Lighthizer mentioned the WTO, the World Trade Organization, and his intent to file a WTO case. However, the president today was not shy when articulating his view of the WTO. FYI, this sounds a bit upcut, but it is the beginning of his comment on the World Trade Organization.
The tremendous money that we've paid since the founding of the World Trade Organization, which has actually been a disaster for us. It's been very unfair to us. The arbitrations are very unfair. The judging's been very unfair. And knowingly, we always have a minority, and it's not fair.
Factually, no member of the WTO has a majority. The dispute settlement body is made up of all 164 member governments. As for the tariffs to be levied against China, those will be outlined later. Farmers are fearful U.S. soybeans and other agricultural products will be the primary weapon of choice should the Chinese decide to up the trade tariff ante. There's one other news item out of Washington, D.C. The omnibus package put together by the GOP and agreed to by Democrats last night has passed the House of Representatives. It needs to go through the Senate before midnight Friday and on to the president's desk to be signed. If that does happen, it includes a Section 199A fix that'll correct what's commonly been called the grain glitch that gave cooperatives an upper hand when farmers made their marketings to them. It is retroactive to the beginning of the year, so January 1st of 2018. If passed and signed into law, it should put Section 199A back to its previous condition. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Matt Bennett from Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois, now joins us to continue our conversation about the commodity markets. Thanks, Matt, for being with us. Tell me what you made of the trade today.
No, it wasn't a bad day. You know, I know there's a lot of concern with some of the talk about tariffs and whatnot, but as I was stating yesterday, I guess I feel like most of this is a fairly well-known fact. We just didn't know maybe all the specifics. And so we hadn't really seen a whole lot of what you would call retaliation just yet. And I guess today was a little bit more of the same.
What do you think about the marketplace from here on out? I know when we talked yesterday, you know, we were talking about prospective plantings report and maybe a switch in acreage and what kind of impact it might have. That's due out next Thursday on the 29th at 11 a.m.
Yeah, I feel like we're going to be somewhat sideways going into the report. It's, you know, today might be the precursor to what it's going to look like going into the report, but I'm sure there's going to be some positioning, especially whenever you get closer. You know, whenever you look at Informa come out today, I mean, most of these folks are coming with 2.5 up to 3 million acres, more beans than corn. I don't know that I'm quite that robust, but by all means, a lot of the data would suggest, you know, you're going to have significantly more bean acres than corn acres, especially with some of these survey-based approaches. So, you know, I don't know right now. I'm probably still maybe only 500,000 to 1 million more bean acres than corn. But by all means, it was not surprising. It would not surprise me whatsoever if you end up with 88.5 corn and maybe 91.5, 92 beans.
In your travels, were there places that were not planning to switch?
Yeah, I mean, like in northern Iowa, some of those folks said that they weren't going to. You look at places in Nebraska, and some of those folks said that they were not going to switch. You know, in some of your heavy corn growing areas, some of your heavy usage areas, definitely some of those folks didn't feel like that was a place that they might switch over to beans. But, you know, I saw a poll yesterday that Farmers Business Network put out that suggested that in Iowa it's going to be one of the larger switches on a percentage basis. So I think overall as a state, you might see a fair amount of acre switch over. And of course, Todd said Illinois would look like maybe 300 plus 1,000 acres. So definitely going to be interesting.
What about the Dakotas? They went heavy to beans last year. Will they, because of the rotation, be in corn?
I don't believe that they're going to be in corn as much as one would think due to how many beans they planted last year. You know, a lot of the folks in the Dakotas have said due to the basis and whatnot, it's just been awfully tough for them to make enough money to be able to justify corn. And anywhere that you see or hear about money crunch, which I think is pretty much all over the corn belt, I think especially in some of the fringe areas, I think folks are kind of shying away because it's definitely more expensive to put the corn in the ground. First of all, I think when you got up to 410, 412, you started to buy a few acres. But then we quickly went right back down under four. And so I think a lot of those folks that might have been teetering probably going to go ahead and stick with their intentions of flannel and soybean.
I just don't know about enough about the crop rotations here, but is it possible rather than corn they go to spring wheat, or rather than soybeans they go to spring wheat?
Oh, by all means. I think when you get up in the upper Midwest, you know, I think that there's a lot of folks that are talking about looking at it again. I mean, when you looked at the USDA's price forecast for the marketing year, wheat was the only one of the big three that was going to be higher. I believe it was around 70 cents higher. So, you know, I think that those who plant wheat who have been beat up in the last two, three, 4 years, you know, been thinking, hey, maybe we'll go ahead and look towards spring wheat, because I think they'd much rather plant spring wheat in some of these areas than corn, based on what they're telling me.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate you taking the time with me today. Any final word before I let you go? Advice to producers about pricing out old or new crop?
Yeah, I think that going into the report, a person probably ought to get some things done just in case, especially with soybeans. You know, you could look at a fairly large number, and I don't want to be sitting with too many unpriced beans in that situation.
Matt Bennett is with Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois. This is the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for a Thursday afternoon. There's a whole lot happening in the world of weather, and Mike Tenner is here now from T-Storm Weather in Chicago to tell us a little bit about that. Over the weekend, there was some rainfall in Argentina. How widespread and helpful might that have been to the crops there?
We would classify that rain as a non-event. It really didn't do much of anything to the corn or the soybean crop down there. And the reason we say that is because of the proprietary data that we collect in-house. What we're looking at is the amount of rain that's fallen over the last 14, 30, 60, and 90-day periods, weighted by their second crop corn production, or at least the corn that's planted later in the year, starting in December, and also their soybean production. If we look at rainfall over those periods and then weight it by corn and soybean production, we don't see any change in the coverage of drought. And that's because it was so dry leading into that period that the little bit of rain we did see didn't even cause the proportions that were dry to diminish. Essentially, we just see dry weather having occurred for the last 30, 60, 90 days, all those periods, just nothing happened. So in our minds, we know that that means that the rain did not do anything, and we need a lot more, and the growing season's coming to an end.
Any reason to believe that next weekend will change things?
Well, we will see some rain in the northern areas tomorrow night and Saturday. Some pretty decent rainfall, too, on the order of 1 to 2 inches. But keep in mind, Todd, we're getting late in the year here, and these northern areas only account for about 10% of soybean production. So if you want to make an argument that this is going to mean something big, you're only talking about a very small proportion of the crop. And we would argue that it's too small to make much of a difference, especially since it's been so dry leading into this period. And again, we just stay in this dry pattern. Once we get beyond this weekend, there's not too much. That region does account for a little bit more corn production, around 30% of their late corn production or 20% of their total. But again, these are small numbers. 80 to 90% of each of those crops doesn't see much of anything for another 10 days. And again, it's kind of like September 10th now. This is getting real late.
Things still all good in Brazil?
Well, we don't have any concerns there. There are some thunderstorms around, and they're going to stay around for a couple of weeks, and that will aid their second crop corn production.
The other hot spot on the planet that I know about for sure is the hard red winter wheat growing regions. They received some weekend rainfall. Did that help?
Well, that did help, but the coverage was not nearly as high as what we'd like to see. If you look at the coverage of drought based on rainfall over the last 30, 60, or 90-day periods, it's pretty clear that about 50% of the U.S. hard red winter wheat crop has been much drier than normal and should be classified as experiencing drought. So that's half of your wheat belt, and that includes the rain. that fell a few days ago. That area is basically from the southern half of Kansas through much of Oklahoma and Texas and into eastern Colorado, essentially that area that experienced the Dust Bowl many, many decades ago. Now, we are going to see some rain across the wheat areas that are already wet, so that half of wheat that's doing great is going to stay great. The other half, again, will see some rain here and there, and we think they probably will see up to a half inch, maybe even an inch of rain. That should alleviate some of that dryness, but whether or not it wipes it out is something we'll have to watch. And keep in mind that the big rain chances there don't start until Wednesday and Thursday of next week, so we have a ways to go until we get there.
Thanks so much, Mike.
You're welcome, Todd.
Mike Tenores with T-Storm Weather in Chicago helps us wrap up this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. I'm Extensions, Todd Gleason.